Have you had your vaccine yet?
That's apparently the new greeting among friends, but as the COVID-19 vaccines become available to a wider age group, it puts a spotlight on an even younger group, children, who are now part of the vaccine studies. We look into the research being done on how COVID vaccines affect children and also what children and parents need to know as they go back to in-person classes.
Our performers come from all over the world, but they have one thing in common. They now call LA home.
And do you miss going to the theater? Well, there may have been a long hiatus, but the arts are still alive. We talked to the CEO of the LA Music Center about when we can see a play indoors again and what new surprises are being offered in the meantime. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now.
And welcome to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Bob DeCastro, in for host Hal Eisner, who is still out on medical leave. We're going to bring you an update on Hal's recovery a little later. Right now, let's talk about those COVID-19 vaccines. It is estimated that about a third of Californians have gotten at least their first dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, and distribution is expanding as supplies increase. And now parents are looking at whether there will be vaccines for their kids. And researchers are testing vaccines on younger and younger kids. Here to talk to us about COVID and children is Dr. David Michalek, the director of pediatric infectious disease at Dignity Health, St. Mary Medical Center in Long Beach. Doctor, welcome. Thanks for joining us to talk about this very important topic. I want to know what you're telling your patients, the parents who have these children, that the vaccinations are now expanding across the state to those 16 and older, and soon we'll see potentially vaccines available for those even 2 and up. What are you telling them?
Bob, as you know, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected so many lives, and the efforts to try to suppress the pandemic require multiple modalities, not just the distancing and mask wearing and hand hygiene, but also significant efforts towards vaccination. The rate at which we have escalated our response to the pandemic has been incredibly fast. You can imagine how fast the vaccination trials have gone through, and we've seen a lot of good work come from many manufacturers with the vaccine in adults. So it only goes to show that we need to address what to do with the younger contingent in our population. Children make up about 25% of the population here in the United States. So if you really want to be serious about getting this pandemic to cease, and we really need to address how to protect our youngest patients.
So it almost seems like saying you're doing this in large part for the greater good, so that we can protect the bigger segments of our society. But what would you say to parents out there who are trying to weigh the risks, whether or not this is risky for their kids, when they've been told all along, especially for younger kids, that they are generally asymptomatic when it comes to COVID-19 and they don't really exhibit any symptoms? Why should they be getting the shot?
Well, that is what the data does tell us, that the majority of individuals who have severe disease from COVID-19 are those that are 55 and older. And for children, the likelihood that they're going to have a bad outcome from COVID-19 infection is incredibly low. So one can naturally assume that the parental response against vaccination is called into question. Yet I will say that there still is infection that does occur in children. Now, granted, those numbers are estimated to be about 1 in 10,000 potentially could actually die from COVID-19 infection. Last year, we had death rates in the United States in children of approximately the same amount that we have from flu, the influenza. So I still think that we should not ignore those numbers. I still think children should be protected from getting COVID-19 infection, specifically for the bad outcomes that they potentially could get. But also, we as in the medical field don't really understand what asymptomatic infection does to children in the long run. Are there going to be some as of yet undiscovered effects that we might discover months or years later? So I think we really need to make sure that we think about that as well. The last thing I think is really important to mention as well is while children largely are asymptomatic when they have COVID-19, it is this passing between children where these variants might occur. We've been hearing a lot about variants in the news these days, and it takes strains, different strains from two different individuals to co-mingle to potentially produce a new variant that the current vaccine schedule is less effective against protecting adults and anyone for that matter. So I think we also need to think about that as well.
Sounds like there's still a lot to be learned out there, and there are clinical trials now underway in terms of giving children, especially young children, this vaccine. What do you know about that, and how quickly soon could they roll this out, do you think, for very young children?
Well, right now we have a vaccine that's available for anyone 16 and older. That is the Pfizer mRNA vaccine. Currently, we have the emergency use authorization for that age group. Most recently, Pfizer submitted to the FDA another expansion of their emergency use authorization to allow to include the age groups of 12 to 15. They most recently have some preliminary data looking at approximately 2,300 children, half of which were given the vaccine and half of which were not given the vaccine. And they actually found really surprisingly great numbers of immune responses in those kids that were vaccinated, that were 12 and older. Because those numbers are very encouraging, and because the safety profile of those children that got the vaccine was not any different than what you would expect to see in adults, they made that submission to the FDA. If the FDA deems that it is worthy of an expansion of the EUA, then I suspect that we probably will see the vaccine roll out in children as early as late summer. Now, as you mentioned, they're also looking at vaccinating children younger than 12 years of age, and some preliminary studies are being done in those age groups as well, not just with Pfizer, but also with Moderna, and also with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
And really, really quickly, Doctor, we only have about 30 seconds here, but what are you saying to parents now sending their kids to school? The final word here, you seem to be on board with vaccines. They don't have the vaccines as of yet, but yet they're sending their kids to school.
Well, I think we all encourage as healthcare providers to send kids back to school. We all want to go back to some level of normalcy. Our kids are lagging behind academically, and they also want to co-mingle with their peers, and also the mental health impact on children is great. So the American Academy of Pediatrics has now for several months recommended that kids return. I think adding vaccination as an added level of protection might encourage some parents to be more likely to send their kids back to school because now they've been vaccinated.
Dr. Michelli, we'll talk to you in just a bit. Coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we have more with Dr. Michelli about the problems of COVID, the vaccines, and where we go from here. We'll have all that right after the break. And we're back now with Dr. Michelli to talk more about some of the current COVID concerns. One of the recent ones is that pause in the use of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine just days ago. That halt coming after several women wound up with rare, dangerous blood clots. Doctor, we want to ask you about that. These blood clots, and we should say extremely rare situations. What's happening here with these women?
Well, it appears as though some individuals who've been vaccinated with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, approximately 6 to 13 days after vaccination, began experiencing symptoms consistent with clots. Now, these clots can occur in multiple areas, specifically in the lungs, causing a deep venous thrombosis, potentially even in the brain. There has been one woman out of the six that were identified through the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, or VAERS system, one woman that unfortunately passed away and one is in critical condition. So this ended up being about one person per 1 million doses given out of the 70 million individuals who've gotten Johnson & Johnson in the United States right now. So the FDA has decided to put a pause on things. And as we are speaking right now, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices is actually reviewing that data to make a determination on what comes next.
So why women in particular do you think have been impacted in these very rare situations?
That really hasn't quite been understood yet. I think that is definitely a consideration. It is unique that it would just occur in women. But the answer to that is right now not known.
All right. And let's talk about anyone who's already had the Johnson & Johnson vaccine prior to this pause. What concerns should they have? What are you telling them?
Certainly valid to have those concerns. And we're already, as medical professionals, getting those calls and questions today. Certainly, we need to first find out what the ACIP is going to be concluding. And then also, we need to, as medical providers, just be aware that we're going to be getting phone calls from patients who complain of symptoms consistent with clots. Those symptoms can be headache, chest pain, blurry vision, seizure, anything like that. If those are things that patients are experiencing, please have them contact their primary care provider or seek some kind of a medical evaluation to make a determination. Although, let's wait and see what the final analysis is from the FDA.
I've had some people ask me, doctor, if they should be taking aspirin or some kind of a thinner. What would you say to that for people concerned about having the Johnson & Johnson vaccine? And I don't know why it's out there, but just for some reason, they've been told to take an aspirin.
I would advise against that for multiple reasons. Number one, aspirin in and of itself has side effects. Number two, we need to first understand the mechanism of what the clot is actually doing. The specific clots that are being described may not respond to mainstream therapy or blood thinners as we might know it, blood thinners like heparin. So unless you're taking aspirin already for a pre-existing condition, I would, at this point, talk to your primary care doctor about it and hold off on it unless there's another reason to do that.
So the pause doesn't seem to be too much of a concern in terms of the vaccine supply. Even here locally, they're saying in the state of California, the city of L.A., it's a really small percentage of the inventory of the vaccines that they have. And now they're just pivoting and distributing the other vaccines to people who already had appointments for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. What would you say to people now who are now going to get this other vaccine, who may be concerned that there has already been a pause in vaccines, and maybe they're going to say, let's just wait a little bit to get the final word about these vaccines? What about the efficacy and the safety of the other two vaccines?
Well, as healthcare providers, we tell our patients, get the vaccine that is immediately available to you. If Johnson & Johnson vaccine is going to be on pause for a longer period of time, and the only other two out there right now are the Pfizer and the Moderna, then you should by all means go ahead and get those unless there is a specific reason why you as an individual would not want those. There are, of course, side effects associated with any of the vaccines and any medical products for that matter. Those are things that you can discuss with a medical professional. And the clotting that we have been hearing about with the Johnson & Johnson is not something that we're inherently seeing with the mRNA vaccines at this time.
And really quickly, less than 30 seconds here, more and more of us are getting this vaccine. When do you expect to see some sort of herd immunity, so to speak, when we can at least free up our society a little bit more?
In order to achieve herd immunity, which I think is the goal for a lot of healthcare providers, we really need to get vaccination rates or at least individuals who've been infected and then have some protection after that of 70%+ of the population. So we still have a lot of work to do to get to that number, and that includes trying to get children vaccinated as well. I remain optimistic, though, as do all healthcare professionals, that we will come through this. It's going to require a lot of positive messaging to reinforce the benefits of vaccination and for us to continue to emphasize the importance of mask wearing and social distancing.
Well, we appreciate your optimism and your information. Dr. Michalek, thank you so much for all of your time. We will talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up next on Fox 11 In-Depth, the smell of grease paint, the roar of the crowd, and actually sitting inside a theater for a show. It could all be coming back now that health regulations are getting looser. We'll find out more right after the break. New health directives coming down this week in LA County allow us once again to gather inside for events. From sports to the arts to special events, we are going back inside. One of the parts of our community that has been shuttered for the past year are our theaters. While movie theaters opened weeks ago, live performances are only just now coming back to life. But that does not happen overnight. Joining us now to talk about the excitement about the reopenings of these venues is Music Center CEO Rachel Moore. Welcome, Rachel. Thanks for joining us on the program.
Absolutely. Delighted to join you.
We miss these entertainment venues so much. All of us just drive by them all the time and see them all closed and shuttered. What has been happening through all of your entertainment venues through the pandemic? Are the doors closed? Are the lights off? Has it just been a ghost town in there?
We've been closed since last March in terms of our theaters, but programming is still going on because we pivoted to doing a lot of digital fare over the past year, which has been terrific.
Tell us about that digital programming, and will the digital programming continue beyond this? Because I'm sure many of our viewers have enjoyed them and wondered, well, heck, if I can't get to the music, any of these music venues in person, it'd be wonderful to be able to see these online. We're so used to it.
Absolutely. The digital fare will absolutely continue as we move forward. We moved some of our traditional programs, like our Dance Downtown, online so people can learn how to dance and dance along. We've moved our performances online, and we've also created new content, new programming that is designed specifically for the digital platform. We're really excited that we've sort of increased our digital chops over the last year. And we have found a lot of people are enjoying being able to be at home and be safe and still enjoy the arts. I absolutely expect that this sort of hybrid of live and digital will continue well into the future.
I tell you, there are so many people in our studio here at Fox 11 News that could use those dance classes. Many people, they'll be enjoying those in the near future. So let's talk about reopening, because for many people, nothing takes the place of actually being there in person. When do we expect that to happen, and what is that going to look like?
Well, reopening is not going to be just a light switch where we start from, dark and then 100% on. It's going to be more of a dimmer switch as we increase our capacity. It will start really with our doing performances live outside. Starting May, we will be having a new program called Dance at Dusk, and we will be on the Jerry Moss Plaza with live dance companies, and people will be socially distanced in pods. And then we will start increasing as the capacity is allowed to. The going into the theaters is going to take time because safety is first, and we want people to feel that they're incredibly safe in the theaters. So I would expect us to be up and running with the full theaters open not until the fall.
Okay, well, we still can look forward to that. In the meantime, I imagine that inside those theaters and all your music venues, there are plans in place. You must be setting up as we speak, getting ready for people to go inside so that people feel safe. So what can people expect when they actually do return?
Well, we've actually spent the last year working on plans to reopen and learning about the new health protocols. The Music Center was designated as a UL certified healthy building. We were really excited during COVID. We were the first in the country. So the team has been working very hard to make sure that our, ventilation systems are a top notch, that the sanitation protocols are absolutely sterling, because it's not just that we need to be safe, it needs to be that everybody feels safe. So when people come back, I think they'll expect to be wearing masks, and we'll see how many people we can put into a theater at any given time. We defer to the county and the state. We're not the scientists, they are, so we follow the rules that they give us. But our number one priority is safety for everyone.
I know everyone just can't wait to get back and to have everything normal and to see the performances there. I know I love watching all of the shows. Buoyant is the industry right now? And you know, it's got to be devastating because so many people are employed in this. And just recently, we saw ArcLight theaters shut down because it just wasn't no longer a feasible business. So how does the Music Center look in the months ahead, in the year ahead? And, you know, do you see a turbulent time in terms of the business model?
Well, this past year has been incredibly difficult for the performing arts. With the closing of the theaters, many, many people lost their jobs and were furloughed. It's been incredibly hard. We were the first to be shut down, and we are, you know, sort of on the tail end of starting the reopening. Many of my colleagues who run arts organizations have been hit incredibly hard financially. And I will say that I am optimistic in that the federal government just passed a giant bill that's pumping $16.25 billion into shuttered venues across the country, the largest infusion of resources to the arts in the history of this country. And the goal was to get these wonderful venues up and running and keeping people engaged, mm-hmm. because the jobs that are associated with these theaters, it's a huge sector. And incredibly important. And it was really heartening that people understand that there are really good jobs and that we drive economies and that we needed the investment and we got it. So I think that, you know, as we move forward, I'm very optimistic.
I know that everyone can't wait to see us as the audiences, and the audiences can't wait to see these beautiful performances. We can't wait to get back. But optimism, I think, is a word that we've been using a lot on the program today. Thank you so much, Rachel. We appreciate it. We can't wait to see you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be right back with more Fox 11 News in depth right after the break. And that's it for this week's Fox 11 News in depth. Thanks for joining us. We've got a little update for you on our in-depth host, Hal Eisner, and his photographer, Joab Perez. Hal and Joab were struck by an alleged drunk driver while working on a story just about a month ago. Joab sent us this photo. He says his recovery is going well, but he has months of rehab ahead before he can get back to work with us. As far as Hal's recovery, he's been spending time at a rehab facility as well. He's been exercising and learning how to work his injured leg again. From all of us here at Fox 11, we wish them a speedy recovery so they can hurry up and come back and join us. Someone give Hal a comb. We'll see you next week.